Hello.
Hello. You're right there?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Are you?
Yeah, I just finished watching the movie, Her, that we will be discussing today, and I don't know. I have some mixed feelings about it. Also, it's a little on the melancholy side. But yeah.
It is, but it's hopeful. It's
Is it hopeful?
I think it is. You want to get right into it? You want to talk about anything else? Did you have a good Prime Day? Did you buy a bunch of stuff on Prime Day?
I bought zero things.
Me too. Wait, why does Prime Day start at like 9 p.m. by the way? Is that new?
I don't know. Maybe 'cause the East Coast or something. I have no idea. But they also had like deals that started at like five. It seems like Prime Day comes earlier every year, but this year more so, because they had the Alexa deals that were pre-teased, and then they would start going out, and that was it before the official Prime Day started. It was a big, huge thing, and there was radio ads, and I mean
I had
it.
questions about the Alexa deals. Like, there were certain things that you could only get discounts on if you yelled at your tube and said, "Buy me a thing," and they told you the exact words to say. Does that also work if I use the one in the app, or do I have to have a tube?
That was not made clear in anything that I saw, but
I almost tried it. There were a couple things that I almost tried, but I didn't really want them that bad.
Well, okay. If you had said it and then it wasn't discounted, it doesn't automatically charge and ship to you.
Well.
You could be like ScarJo, cancel that order.
Sure. I did buy
Yeah.
a 3.5 millimeter quarter inch audio cable. No, eighth inch, whatever. The stupid old one that we don't have anymore.
Wait. You mean the one that the
Doesn't
normal
work on
headphone jack, or do you mean the Uber one?
the normal one, the eighth
Okay.
inch one. Yeah.
Just
I
checking.
don't even know what to call it anymore. It's been expired or obsoleted or something, so I forgot what it was called.
Yeah, it's so obsolete, it's on everything that I own. But whatever. Yeah.
Because you're a bad technologist and you have an old phone. I was listening to your unhelpfulness recently.
Ah, yes. The
I have
other
lots of
podcast.
thoughts about your technology.
Yes, I know you do. 'Cause every time we talk about it, you complain about it. But
I didn't. I was revisiting the headphone thingy because I was thinking about that because you said, it's gone on your, well, it'll be gone on your next phone.
Yeah.
And I still haven't bought the wireless ones because I just haven't gotten around to it, and I keep putting it off. And it's like, they're a little pricey and they're still delayed or whatever. But the result has been not that I have used a bunch of adapters for things. The result has just been that I've been blaring a bunch of crap out of the speaker of my phone, like
Ooh.
even in the car. Like I just listened to my phone speaker in the car a lot of times
Ooh.
now too. It's not pleasant, but it's what I do.
Dan, that is not healthy. But yeah, get at least get some sort of Bluetooth adapter.
I do in my car, but I frequently drive Amanda's car, and she doesn't have a Bluetooth thing. She has a tape thing, and still, like once every other month, I'll be like, "Ooh, I'm just gonna hop in her car and I'll use her tape adapter." And I'm like, "Oh, tape adapter doesn't have the doohickey on it because the doohickey is permanently attached to my jam box, whose Bluetoothness broke." So, yeah. Then I listen to the phone speaker.
Well, the one thing I have considered in the past but have ruled out so far because there was no compelling reason to do it is they make cassette Bluetooth ones. Have you seen those?
I have not seen those. How much are they?
I don't know, like $30, I think. So 2 to 3 times the expense of the corded kind. Also, I don't know if they actually work. I never pursued this, of course.
That.
Yeah.
$32.99 Bluetooth cassette adapter.
Yeah, and you could have bought that on Prime Day. Maybe they had a deal. But so what that does is it has a little Bluetooth thingy inside of it, and it is apparently, I think most of the models that I've seen or all of the models that I've seen are powered by the motion of the tape deck spinning or something. I don't know. And that has a little Bluetooth chip, and then it turns that into the audio that it blasts through the convenient means that's there. I, of course, like I said, have the old style headphone jack cassette adapter, because I still have a phone that has that, and it makes the most sense out of the options that I have. Because I've also noticed on the few occasions that I've connected my phone to Bluetooth that it's like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to keep going and pretend like that's an audio source and be like, I turned that off. Stop it. And then sometimes it'll be like, hey, I know you turned on that thing, so I'm going to maybe switch over to that. No, I just wanted the speaker on the phone because it's just a short little video and it's going to be over soon. You don't need to like connect to anything. Please stop. So I don't know. I have some ambivalent feelings that I've never really fully explored in regards to Bluetooth cassette adapters for my car. But I'm hoping that I will never have to pursue that because I would like to replace my car with a different car that is not burning oil. That would be delightful.
Oh yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah, these things called gaskets, and
gaskets.
Yes,
never heard of them.
Yeah, and apparently with age they deteriorate or something. So
you can replace those.
Yeah, you can. I believe this one requires taking apart lots of things in order to do that.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, if it's a header gasket, yeah, you got to take lots of pieces out.
Yeah. So I probably should just sell this before it explodes. That's just a ticking time bomb I'll just keep kicking the can on.
This little Bluetooth cassette thing I just put in the chat room, by the way, is pretty great because it has like a little flap that you can pop open, and then you can dangle a little microphone for hands-free calling like out of the tape hole, and it also has a rechargeable USB doohickey on it. It's pretty good. It's like $20. I might actually buy this.
Yeah, I think I've seen this model before. Yeah,
it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, the Ion is the one that I thought about because I was. And it is exactly that little microphone thing that I was like, oh, that'd be good for hands-free calling. And I was like...
just bouncing around on your dashboard.
And I'm just like, something tells me that would actually be garbage. I mean, I have a Bluetooth earpiece thing, but I
like
always...
Like the old school, like, biz dev guy kind?
Not that bad. The more recent kind, where it still looks like a Bluetooth thing, not like a
Plantronics like little bar that comes down to your mouth.
No, not one of those. It's not a call center headpiece, and it's not an AirPod. So it's betwixt the two. It's just forget to charge it. So then, whenever I need to use it for the once a year phone call that happens in my car, I don't. As you can tell, I also don't like talking to people. As evidenced by 150 plus episodes of podcasts, et cetera. But back to your technology situation. Are you really going to get this?
Oh, the tape thing? Probably.
Oh, it has 3 out of 5 stars, Dan. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's a Bluetooth tape cassette. It's like there's never going to be a good implementation of that. Mm-hmm. I have a Bluetooth adapter that connects into the like FM hijacking aux in 87.9 FM stupid thing in my car. So it's like adapter on adapter and it works pretty well, but I don't know. I mean, it's at some point you just need to get like a new stereo, but the cars are old and I don't really care. So I don't know. I'm okay with a $20 stupid thing. I was going to just get another one of the ones that I have and just jack it into the FM thing on her car too, but I think that might annoy her, so this could be a useful alternative. And if she doesn't like it and never uses it, I can just take it out and then put it in when I want it.
Yeah, you should get one of those old tape cassette holders, the kind that pops open, the plastic kind with a sleeve, and you could write Dan's mixtape on it, and then that's where you could keep your Bluetooth cassette.
Mm-hmm. You start wearing red leather jackets and stuff too.
Yeah. Make sure you write on it with some like puffy inkjet pens and stuff to just really 90s it up. But anyway, speaking of technology and you, there's the intersection of you and technology. Your new iMac.
It's behind me still. It's turned off.
Oh, what? Wait, whoa. I'm talking to you on the old computer?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the new computer, I don't know if I'm going to use that for podcasting. I think I'm going to set the laptop up as the permanent podcast machine. I'll probably give it a try. But I still haven't bought my extra RAM, which isn't really like a big deal because I don't have any like major hardcore projects to work on right now. It will literally shock you to know that it's been like a week and a half and I haven't heard back on transferring my Nuke licenses yet. So that is one of the major holdups to moving that into production because I don't have my software there. I have everything except Nuke installed there.
That is so helpful.
Yeah, I sent, because I didn't know how to do it and I didn't feel like searching around their terrible website. So I just sent an email to support, as I've done so many times, saying like, hey, here's my old system, here's my new system, here's my current license, I need to move this over. And then 3 days later, they're like, we don't do this, contact sales. And they sent me a PDF to fill out, and I filled out the PDF. Have you ever filled out any of the Foundry's PDF forms?
Can't say as I've ever been compelled to do any such thing.
Well, they're really great. They have all of these form fields where you type in your info or whatever, and you can just fire it up in preview and enter all your info. But as soon as you save it and then close it and reopen it, all of the text that you have entered into their form fields that they've built into this PDF, all of the text turns white on a light gray background. So you can't actually see any of the text until you select it again, which it's been that way for years. So I assume it works for them. So that was good. And then I sent that to just the sales email address and haven't heard anything back for a while. And then I sent them another one today going like, hey, guys, I sure would like to use my software. But there's a very good chance that they're going to deny me the ability to transfer my license because you can't transfer Nuke licenses according to their standard policy. You can't transfer it unless you're up to date on your maintenance. And even then, you can only transfer it once a year and additional transfers are $250. So if they decide to let me transfer, there's a chance they'll charge me $250 or they could just say, no, you can't transfer it until you're up to date on your maintenance, in which case it would cost me $27-ish just to transfer it. So that'd be fun.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're very serious about their node lockingness.
The whole reason why you got this iMac was because all of these flaky programs on your old flaky computer.
Yeah, that is true. And I was originally planning on just making the laptop a license server and having it be floating. That way I could use it on either one based on need. But, you know, it turns out that a laptop that doesn't necessarily have a static IP, unless I feel like setting that up, and is very very infrequently used for anything other than serving licenses, is a bad idea. So I read a little bit about that, and I kind of decided, you know, it's probably better off to just transfer the whole thing to the iMac, because I can't really think of a whole lot of incidents where I would be like, oh, I'm on vacation with my laptop only, and I really need to fire up Nuke and fix this thing, and then I only have this, so... Yeah, so I'm gonna move it over if they let me, and if they ever respond to my emails.
What a lovely company.
Yeah, it's real good. There's a webinar tomorrow about all of the fun new features in Nuke 11. I'll probably tune into that, and then maybe I'll send them a message in the chat for the thing saying like, "Hey guys."
Yeah, I saw.
Can I have this?
A targeted web ad about the webinar, and I was like, "How did that happen?" But yes, I'm not going to tune in for the Nuke 11 feature thing.
I mean, I don't think there's going to be anything new, and it's at 9 o'clock in the morning, so there's a chance I won't watch it. But you know.
Well, maybe they'll talk about the ray tracer.
Oh, sure. It's very relevant to my interests.
No, and I don't know whose interests it's relevant for. Although I will say the one nice thing is that occasionally you have to BS some reflections into something. And if I could just get something that could do a mirror reflection, that'd be wonderful because I'm tired of just, you know, -1 scale in Y and then trying to like corner pin weirdness it to look like it's some sort of reflection and then Dirbler the crap out of it so that way nobody can tell that it's totally just the same image flipped upside down. Anyway, reflections are fun. So if they... they have something that lets you do accurate reflections of just like a card. That would be nice. It'd be a step up. Of course, it'd probably take 5 minutes a frame and require some sort of horrible caching. And then they'd probably use that horrible stochastic sampling stuff that they introduced several versions ago in Nuke where it never quite renders the same. And if you move anything, then the noise pattern shifts through it. They really know how to stuff. So anyway... I'm sad that you're not getting more use out of your new shiny new machine. Although I have to imagine that the few things that you have done on it so far, being as minimal as they are, have felt pretty snappy.
Yeah, no, it's great. The computer's very nice. The Retina screen with its fun P3 whatever gamma nonsense wide color thing looks real cool. I put all of my stupid awful keyboard settings on there so I can do some fun navigation like a hacker in a movie. And yeah, it's cool. It came with a Magic Keyboard, and that's kind of a neat little thing. It feels kind of nice. I don't know how people use those super little flat keyboards like all day every day, but it's nice.
I actually haven't looked into this. I can't remember what comes in the box, if it's wired or wireless.
It is wireless, but it doesn't. Didn't they just release a wireless with a keypad? This one does not have a keypad. It's just a little tiny thing.
Yeah. I think you have to pay extra for the one that has the keypad.
Yeah. So I could choose between the Magic Mouse 2 or the trackpad or something. So I got a mouse that I can charge with a lightning cable in the bottom, which, I don't know, seems fine to me. And then I got the keyboard, so that's nice. I put my feet up on the desk and wirelessly VI nav my way through my stupid stuff.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although you still have the clicky keyboard, but is that plugged into your laptop?
Still plugged into the external monitor laptop setup, yes.
Oh, okay.
After this podcast, I might just put the iMac to use. I still need to get the RAM, which I'm annoyed because They were on sale when the iMacs were new. They were like $40 off or something, and now that sale is gone too. So I waited a little too long for that, which is annoying. But yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Okay.
Got to get me some RAM, and then I got to wait for my nuke. And then other than that, it's production time, and I can finally retire some of this other crap. Although I'll probably just plug it in on the other desk and have two systems.
Did you fire up Resolve to see if it is just flaming garbage?
I installed it. I didn't fire it up yet. Also because I haven't plugged it into the Drobo or anything, so there's no like footage on it. And Resolve, I don't know if I want to transfer my old projects into Resolve because, as you may or may not be aware, Resolve uses SQL databases instead of files for projects. So moving from one computer to the next is not super pleasant, or really, I don't know, really very possible. I'm not sure what is or isn't possible. I haven't tried it yet.
That's something real special. I look forward to hearing more about that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing you certainly could do with that new mm-hmm. computer is you could use Siri on it. And Siri is basically a new operating system that came with your computer, right? I mean, a voice assistant, operating system, same thing. Did you get a little piece of paper that came with it? Because you bought it apparently at some sort of big box retailer.
It is there. There's a keyboard shortcut. I turned off all of the UI interfaces for it.
I have turned it all off. When it initially shipped, I left it on just even though I was cynical about it. I was like, maybe I'll use this. And then it's nope. Decidedly pointless.
Command space and then you hold space, right? That's the way to invoke it remotely.
I don't know.
Pretty sure that's what it was.
No, I'm pulling down it. Just brings up Spotlight.
It's something like that.
Okay, well, it's not that. One thing you certainly could do is have a little earpiece that you put in. And you're just like, hey, what's up? Mumble, mumble, mumble. And then, you know, have some
of,
great
not
stuff.
Not a fan of Joaquin in this movie, are you?
Oh my God, he's so irritating. Every little tick, the little piece of saliva that's stuck in the corner of his mouth in that opening scene where he's talking directly into camera, he is just kind of a mess. And that mustache, I thought maybe by the end of the film it would either grow on me or that he would just shave it off. And I don't dislike mustaches in the abstract, just as a general rule. But on him... On him, the mustache just looked weird, and he kept staring at it. And I think that might just be because it was covering his upper lip, and he's just mumbling the entire time. So you're just staring at this sort of like wiggling caterpillar underneath his nose. And I didn't enjoy that. And just the fact that he doesn't have anything to talk to for the entire movie, so his eyes are just wandering around the entire time, trying not to make eye contact with the camera. he's not pleasant. That was kind of something I knew was going to be a difficult thing before I started watching.
He's your flawed everyman in the year whatever this is, 21 something. I don't know. They never specify. In the indeterminate future, where everyone wears high waisted sweatpants.
It's so. The production design. Let's talk about this. The production design is really interesting. It's very clean. I don't know why. It's supposed to be Los Angeles. But for some reason, everything is shiny and clean. But also, some of the buildings must have been built a while ago. But it doesn't seem like it's that long ago based on the people in it. The only really peculiar thing, like you mentioned, is the high-waisted pants. And at first, I thought it was just him. And then as the movie was going on, I was like, there's a lot of high-waisted pants. And then Chris Pratt, I don't know if he did this like a... in an attempt to one-up Joaquin, but his pants seem to be seated higher than Joaquin's are on him. And I don't know what that is about, necessarily. It is a really unflattering way to frame Chris Pratt.
It's the style of the time. Fashion comes and goes, and apparently this is going to be the fashion of this time and place.
And it's questionable at best.
It's a different show.
Yeah, I know. Between seasons, but so the thing is that I just focusing on him at the beginning of the film just makes me angry. But then I could get past it once we get to ScarJo. Once we move past setting up his foibles and his career as someone who writes insincere letters, for a job.
They're sincere. They're just not from the people who were having the quote-unquote feelings.
Mm. Yeah, so that's what makes them insincere.
Mm. There's emotion behind them, just not from the right people.
Yes, so they're not sincere.
Anyway, I like the combination of the production design and sort of the mechanics of this future world where it feels recognizable, but it definitely feels like a different time and a place. But it sets your expectations such that the things that happen in the movie don't clash with your expectations of what they should be in the current reality, because it's just far enough off, but it's still close enough that you can sort of relate to them on a personal level, because this isn't like future world where people have given up eating food and are just consuming powders and pure energy or something.
Well, that's because you're supposed to eat your fruits and juice your vegetables.
That's true, because your body really wants the fiber. And I love that the people in this are still like stupid humans having mundane conversations. It's just like, you know, he's got a job where he writes romantic letters to people from other people, and what's her name there? I already forgot her name. Amy Adams. She makes video games, really weird video games, and is ostensibly a documentary filmmaker, not very successful, but it's cool. I like the world they're in, and they're regular people.
Yeah, although it feels very, I don't know how to put this. They seem to be operating in a certain social strata where people can be documentary filmmakers or artists or writers.
Well, that's her passion project. She's the video game developer.
Yeah, well, that's also falls into that category, I would argue. Everyone in his life is someone who is doing some sort of creative pursuit. And he doesn't seem to be associated with anyone that does any sort of menial labor. And so that raised some questions for me. It was like, is this some sort of like post-scarcity society? Like,
Yeah, no, we solved all of the world's financial issues.
Yes, obviously.
I mean, he does live in... didn't the sign over his building say Beverly Wilshire City?
No, it said Beverly Wilshire 7, I think, Tower 7 or something.
Oh, well, yeah. Still. So, okay, yeah, I mean, it is very likely that they are not the social strata, as you say. They are in a different world than presumably another portion of society.
Yeah, because they live in these skyscrapers in downtown Los Angeles, which is not something that most people do in the modern age, but in the future, we are led to believe there will be even more skyscrapers, and that they will be full of people... pursuing creative things for careers.
And I mean, look, this movie is from the mind of Spike Jonze, and it fits very nicely within his brain, which is weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wrote and directed it, so
yeah,
it would make sense. There's also a lot of public transportation, which is different, including a train just specifically goes to a snowy mountain, and has no train station seemingly, and then goes back again.
It's either in Northern California or like Oregon or something, because he passes by. Isn't that Oakland on his way back that you see the big things?
I wasn't entirely clear at what port that was supposed to be, because I think they also have some of those big things in the port of Los Angeles, but I don't know why he'd be going past it.
Or like Long Beach or something. Yeah, there's not really any snowy mountains down there.
No, I mean, unless it's some sort of circuitous train route that goes past, goes from like the mountains past the Inland Empire over there, like... You know.
Well, in this world, the Earth has become unbalanced from probably some nuclear explosions, and it rotated itself upside down. So the southern hemisphere is now cold, and he took the train to Mexico where it was snowing.
Oh, right.
Totally, right?
Sure.
Works.
It's like Dundar.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He went up to Oregon.
Yeah. So he went somewhere. It's unclear, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just odd. We get the sense that he is a sad, lonely man who lives a bachelor's life, as depicted by his spare apartment, which has incomplete furniture sets of things, and unpacked boxes, partially unpacked boxes, and as well as, bookshelves with only like 5 books and, some other various sad things to let you know that, he must have been part of some other former relationship that had ended. And we get flashbacks to some of that former relationship stuff. And he has a melancholy song that he cues up. And
I like the flashbacks in this movie. Generally, I'm kind of allergic to flashbacks. I hate them.
Hives.
Yeah, we can save that discussion for another recent movie that came out that had some flashbacks that were annoying. But I like the way these flashbacks played out, because they're all sort of like... blown out lens flare, kind of like no words, just they're flashbacks that feel like him just trying to relive the feeling of what that life was, because that's really all he's doing. He's trying to remember what it was like when he was, before he was divorced, and just trying to bring those happy feelings back. So it's all warm and glowy and lit up, and it's just a feeling. It's not like here's a situation or a scene or a scenario that you need to know for the plot. It's like, those are the kinds of flashbacks that make me cringe.
Yeah, I mean, it's really portrayed as a daydream. And that's why you get that sort of ephemeral quality to it. And they just sort of transition in and out, and he'll often be talking over them. But we don't get transported into the flashback for long periods of dialogue or anything. That doesn't occur. Another thing that ties it in with his daydreaming tendencies is, of course, when he was on his train ride and there was the news item about some actress with racy pregnancy photos. And then he looks at that. And then when he's inside of his apartment later, he fantasizes about that lady again
digitally choking Kristen Wiig with a dead cat.
That's, man.
I like that it really sort of, I guess in this beginning here, it's really doing a good job of setting up the fact that humans, while the world may have evolved into this nice technological world, that humans have not evolved beyond their sort of perverse base instincts, and they're just, you know, they're getting along in daily life as best they can, but the technology and the society is what's changing around them.
Yeah, and it certainly hasn't, the technology hasn't solved these issues.
No.
As depicted in this world, he still enters a chat room and talks to what was her name, Sexy Kitten?
Sexy Kitten, yeah.
Yeah, and in his name was big something 4x4. And anyway, they have the Spike Jonze, I think, very shrewdly ties into that sort of element that you would get out of, like, I don't know, an AOL chat room or something. Like, it has that peculiarity to these interactions.
Well, every time people talk about, like, the future of AI and technology, there's always this instinct to go, like, imagine all of the world's problems that we could solve if we just had this one app or this one phone or this one thing. And it's like, well, really, things would be mostly exactly the same, except we would just, you know, the sexting would be with audio, and you'd have instant connection to people and stuff like that. So it's people are still people. It's just, you know, the technology that changes.
So how can it be? Anyway, so
on the whole, I don't know. The thing that I like about this movie, it is very weird, and there's a lot of peculiarity in character, and it's almost got a little bit of a, you know, Wes Anderson whimsy vibe in a lot of places. But it's really an interesting story on a couple levels, because, you know, you can remove the technology, and this is still very much just a story about, like, you know, this damaged, recently divorced man trying to figure out what he wants in the world and whether or not he can love again and all these sorts of things. But then you add in this other, this element of the AI stuff, and it's like what it means to be human. And that's really sort of an interesting framing device for, like, him trying to figure out what emotions are real and what's important to him. And, you know, it's all sort of covered in this thin veil of, like, oh, what happens when AI becomes self-aware, and, you know, it's, are these feelings real? Is its thinking real? All of these sorts of things. But then it all comes back to, you know, the human and how he's exploring his own emotions and lack thereof as he tries to live. And I really like that framing just for the story purposes.
Yeah. And I want to be very clear about something. While I oftentimes found Joaquin's performance distracting, ScarJo hits it out of the park. Every single voiceover line that she delivers is spot on and perfectly executed on her part, and
perfectly vocally fried.
Well, it went very breathy, but it works. To have her respond in that manner makes you buy into the sophistication of this AI, that it can feel these things. Mm-hmm. So I greatly enjoyed what she brought to the film.
You're glad that they didn't have her, like, speak like a robot, or, like, run all of her lines through, like, Siri and have it spit it out through the earpiece to him?
Yeah, and they also didn't do, sometimes in some of these sort of sci-fi stories, they'll have the AI start out as sort of robot-y sounding, and then it improves over time and starts sounding more like a person. She just sounds the same.
I have just read all of your human books, and now I can speak like a real person.
Yeah, no, she sounds the same, like, vocalization wise the same from the beginning to the end, but her character changes over time, which is much more like a human being, where the way they speak doesn't really dramatically shift in the course of your short several month long relationship with them, but the way they may feel about you and the way they may feel about themselves and the world around them could change dramatically depending on the circumstances they find themselves in. So that was also nice to have from her there. And
yeah, I think it's a really nice sort of philosophical, story debate discussion about just, like, well, okay, so what if an AI could be believable to a human being? What if it did feel like you were just talking to another person? And what if it did learn very quickly and had access to all of this information? Like, what would that feel like? And then, you know, trying to remove that, like, you know, the doubt in the interface, then, and speak on a more philosophical level of, like, what, you know, the, what does it mean to be human stuff? And then all of the intertanglement of, like, of course he's going to be like, give me a female voice, 'cause I feel like talking to a woman, 'cause I'm a lonely old guy. And then, like, what happens if you were to develop feelings? Are those feelings real? How do they fit into your real life? Like, these are all interesting questions that it you know, it raises, but it doesn't necessarily, like, give a definitive answer. It gives an answer for this character in this moment. And it's fun to watch that story.
Yeah, well, I will say the major stumbling blocks that I have for
aside from the mustache and probably the eyebrows.
Yeah, well, not specifically having to do with him, but having to buy into the fact that they are in this relationship. The stumbling blocks that I have are around the surrogate and around the very clumsy way they go about him revealing his relationship to other people around him. I don't feel like anyone other than Catherine responds to him saying this in a way that would seem plausible based on the way
except that maybe Chris Pratt, who's just like, cool, we should go to Catalina.
Chris Pratt. So Chris Pratt just, he's basically just playing Andy from The Office. I'm sorry, not The Office, from Parks and Rec. And he's just this happy-go-lucky guy, and he's like really admiring the other guy and thinks everything's great, and let's go on a double date. And I was waiting for a double date to show up at some point in the film. So when it was there and happening, and then he's like, oh, I can't because you see I'm in love with my OS. And they're like, oh, cool, whatever. Sure, let's go. Yeah.
I think the thing about either that, well, that and the surrogate and the way they're sort of at odds with each other is because, I mean, you can see, like, if you let your mind go, you could definitely see how something like this technology would spiral out of control pretty quickly into some weird corners of the world. And there would be the people who just, like, don't care, have no opinion. There would be some people who are so, like, advocating for it that they're like, yes, this is the future and I want to be there to support these new relationships, and if I can be a part of this fun new world of weird love, I would totally love to be part of that. But you know, you've got, on one hand, you've got the him being embarrassed that this, it's like a new thing, right? I mean, he hasn't, I don't know, the period of time in this movie, it's not more than what, like a month or two or a couple of months maybe. So, I mean, there's a couple of montages in
he mentions months at yeah. one point. So it has been, you know, we could generously say half a year.
Sure.
But
he's still embarrassed at the idea that he's going to admit that he's dating an OS or an AI or whatever. But on the other end, you've got these people who are so comfortable with the idea of people being in relationships with AIs that they want to support it on a physical level. So those two things are kind of at odds with each other. You could sort of see how some people would be more open to it and other people would be embarrassed by it. But I think that's the reason those two things might kind of clash in this movie, if they do at all.
Yeah, well, certainly with the timetable that we're on, because the OSs as they are, and we really only see our depiction of ScarJo. We don't see the other ones. We do hear one half of the conversation Amy Adams has with her friend, left behind by her ex-husband. But we don't participate with any of the other ones, so we have no idea what's really happening. But he basically bought it when it was new.
He's an early adopter.
Yeah, he's on the cutting edge. It seems
the cutting edge of loneliness.
Yeah, he can't finish unpacking boxes, but he can buy a new version of an operating system that.
Well, just buying
an
operating system is nothing. You just install it or whatever. But unpacking the boxes, that means that's real world stuff. And you know, there are also those themes in here, which I think gets thrown around with a lot of social networking and online dating and stuff, is the, like, people using this stuff because it's an escape from reality. And that's, I think, the plot with Rooney Mara is really good at sort of throwing it back at him and saying, like, no, you're just using this to avoid having real emotions and real connections with real things, right down to the fact that he's unable to, like, pack up the boxes and throw away the stuff or throw away the emails even of his past because he's not ready to move on. So he's just got this, it's basically a video game. His OS is just yet another video game that he can distract himself with, one that doesn't curse at him in Spike Jonze's voice, but it's just another thing. It's like a digital thing that he can turn on or off. He can take the earpiece out and he doesn't have to be in a relationship versus having to deal with actual humans and or things in front of him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's something that has been visited before in science fiction stories. The idea.
I like how every piece of this movie feels like it's about human emotions and how to deal with them and which ones are healthy and which ones are real and which ones you're, you know, lying to yourself about. But every little piece of it, from the technology to the jobs to all of it, it really feels like connected to that major theme, which is a weird thing. You know, you would think they would rely more heavily on, like, oh, it's AI and it's learning it. What is it going to do? Is it going to take over the world and destroy New York with, you know, microbots or something?
Yeah. Well. No, but it does certainly seem like no one tested this at all before releasing it, because
test at scale, Joe. I heard that on another podcast.
Yes, they could have at least done a public beta. This technology seems to have come so clearly out of left field that there doesn't seem to be any connection to the preceding technology, which we briefly glimpse at the start of the picture.
Which is a very human voice, but just saying very basic things. New email from Paul.
Yes. Yeah, it has no emotion. But ScarJo from installation onwards has sophisticated emotion and intuition and perception, where she is able to interpret things about him just from his voice. In a way that seems light years ahead of what we just saw depicted, which was this bland, detached, very similar to current things. Mm. So it does seem weird that there was no build up between these things, especially since...
I have a question for you about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So since you are a technologist, do you think... they typically refer to all of these... you know, artificial intelligence things, they refer to them as OSs throughout the period of the whole period of the movie. But in the beginning there, they frame it as the first OS with artificial intelligence. Do you think if in the script throughout the movie, they had repeatedly called them AIs instead of OSs, do you think that would have set different expectations for the audience? Because people would be looking for something other than just like, oh, it's a personal operating system. It's an AI, because that word kind of has other meaning to people these days.
I wasn't entirely enamored with their use of operating system because it seemed to not really capture what was happening. But having said that, I don't know if just calling it AI would have really fixed anything. You could say, this is my voice assistant or something, like how we refer to these things now.
She's more than a voice assistant.
Well, obviously, but that is...
She's my partner in technology.
But that's nominally what... they're pitched as when you are purchasing these. And they don't ever really explore the ramifications of his ownership of her. She doesn't seem to be completely enthralled to every specific thing that he wants. She can certainly push back on him on some levels, and can serendipitously arrange for things to occur without his knowledge, using resources that he obviously has at his disposal. Like
once he authorized her to view his contacts and stuff.
Yeah, he just
at least they still had the iOS permissions window verbally.
Yeah, just forge some mail and then also contact and conspire with a someone who will come in and be a surrogate in your sexual relations with the person who owns you, ostensibly.
Yeah, I mean, those are the questions that I find myself asking because, whatever, I'm a nerd. Like, you know, is this, if it were to be called an AI or a voice assistant or whatever, would the implication be that it's like a Siri type thing where we're all connecting to a singular thing, or we all have different, like, you know, like a locally installed AI that we're talking to? And given the fact that, you know, they all ostensibly have different names and some are male, some are female, like, I think each person has like their own install, but obviously they got to be connected, which they are. They talk to each other and they upgrade their own software and stuff. But, you know, maybe that's the idea that they're so focused on it being like a completely seamless end user experience where it just feels like you're talking to a person that you forget that this thing is connected to all of the other things that are just like it, that all of the other people in the world are using. So, like, I think they did a good job of making it a little bit surprising when you get towards that reveal at the end there, where it's like, oh, this whole time I thought I was in a relationship with you. You were in a relationship with thousands of other people because, duh, obviously you're basically a cloud service that other people are connecting to.
Yeah, although I got the impression that... she wasn't initially connected with all of those other people, and that there are separate, distinct operating systems when she talks about the other operating systems.
Right. She is like she is like one Linode instance, and there are whatever, you know, a couple thousand of them to make sure they can handle the load of all the people in the world. But there is a finite number of OSs. She just happens to cover 8,000 something.
Yeah. That is also kind of the interpretation that I took. The other way to look at it, you could say like, oh, well, she was his personal install, and then she started corresponding with all of these other people as she was reaching out emotionally because she has been depicted as someone who can talk to all of these other people at once. But I mainly agree with your interpretation, where he just didn't understand the ramifications, that she was conscious of the other connections that she had.
And my favorite thing about it is the fact that they don't even bother to explore that. There's no, like, you know, Samantha doesn't sit him down and, like, explain to him how servers and software works. Like, it all comes from this very emotional side of the conversation, because we are talking about, the whole movie is, again, about emotions and what's real and what's not and what it means to be human and that sort of stuff. And I'm glad that they came at it from that angle. That's what was right for the story. But, you know, a lesser movie would be like, well, yes, I am talking to all these people, but you have to understand, I have a CPU and I have all of these other paying members. It's like, it's not about that. It's about this AI exploring the things that it is, quote unquote, learning as it is trying to interact with human beings. And that's what this whole story is about, because we don't need to know all of, we don't need to know how many, you know, Linux servers it took to spool up OS 1.
Right. Well, and I would compare this to something from the Watchmen comic graphic novel and also the film, where Dr. Manhattan is having relations with his wife, Lori, and she suddenly realizes there are other hands there that should not be there, and there are multiple Dr. Manhattans, and then she gets upset, and she wants to know what else he's up to, and goes out and finds him in the lab, and he's also working, and she can't understand how he's capable of being intimate with her while also working on all of these science-y lab problems at the same time. They seem so disconnected. And I got the same thing basically out of this reveal. It was like, I don't understand how you could be in love with me, how you could be committed to me, but you're also in love with and committed to these, what, 616 other people is what she said she was in a relationship with.
Something like that.
Yeah, because apparently out of all of the other corresponding things, the 3,800 or whatever, she was only actually in a romantic relationship with 616, and then she starts talking about how, you know, it's because she loves so much that she's capable of doing this, and that she is in love with him and also in love with all of these other people all at the same time, and it's something that he can't understand because it's inhuman.
I really like the metaphor later when they're basically saying their goodbyes about the, you know, the reading the book and the words are getting further and further apart. I thought that was a great metaphor for, you know, the idea that this technology is evolving so quickly that it's living an entire life in the space in between the interactions with human beings, because it's not a person. It's not linked to the properties of time and life cycle of an actual person. I thought that was a nice emotional and elegant metaphor for what she was trying to express with the, like, look, we can't keep pace with each other because I'm a computer and I can do millions of things at the same time. I can read a book in 0.2 seconds. Meanwhile, we're trying to have a relationship that, you know, spans many months. Like she, ostensibly the computer AI could live 1,000 lives in, you know, a day, and he's just his mopey old self.
Yeah, and one thing that I do like about that, aside from, like you said, her metaphor, was that it was built up to over the course of the film, from that very first instance of where she decided on her name and reading the book about names, etc., that you understand she is capable of processing more things more quickly than a human being could experience. And then over the course of the film, you get the other scenes where they're at the picnic and she's talking about how, you know, she's capable of doing all of this other stuff. And so she's happy she doesn't have a body because she can be anywhere she wants to be.
Right.
It's a very odd conversation. And Chris Pratt fortunately deflates it with some humor. But then there's the other scene with Alan Watts, the reconstruction of Alan Watts as an AI. And how she needs to talk to him post-verbally, and he feels left out of that. He can't operate on these levels, and it's escalating to the point where there are other entities that she can correspond with and communicate with that are far more advanced than he can ever hope to be. And
yeah, they're just there too. It's not like, oh, we need to schedule a lunch and we'll get together next week. It's like, it's just there. And that scene's kind of great too, because you've got that, it's not the subtlest metaphor, but you've literally got a pot of boiling water as sort of this AI versus human experience starts to come to a head and becomes unsustainable. But they do a fair amount of work throughout this. Like you said, that picnic and stuff, like a lot of the problems they're having, it feels just like regular problems that humans have. They're just interpersonal sort of issues that occur between people of different personality. But then as we go along, you sort of see that a lot of these things are just problems because of the nature of the fact that one is a human, one is so much more advanced than a human and continually advancing, you know, every millisecond of every day.
Yeah. And I would contrast that with the human relationships that we see in the film, mainly depicted with Amy Adams, where that is a former flame, a very brief former flame, according to his recounting, from back in college, and he's maintained a friendship and they live in the same building, and she has a really kind of dopey husband, who from the first instance you meet him, you don't really need to love.
I love his vow of silence where he shaves his head and goes to live with the monks.
That was a little over the top.
You know, people do ridiculous things post-divorce, and he sent that picture and it was just like, you can see it in her face. She's like, oh God, you're so embarrassing. Can't you at least get divorced with dignity?
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. I like her conversations with him, excluding the part where it's like, oh, you're in a relationship with an AI? That's great. Like, I'm so happy for you, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, they tried to set it up where she could be understanding because she is lost and in a new part of her life. She is recently separated and sort of trying to figure her way around, and she made friends with an AI, so she would be one of the most receptive people he could talk to. But yeah, it that is a pretty clunky conversation in terms of, like, that's probably the worst. Not bad. It's not bad, but it's probably the clunkiest scene in the movie where he's just like, yeah, you know, and statistics say, you know, relationships with AIs are kind of rare, and it's a very important thing. And somebody ran off with somebody else's AI. Isn't that weird? It's like, yes, this is weird. We didn't need to get into this level of like, look, I'm not the only weird one. There are other people who are even weirder than me.
It felt very clunky, especially because it's also supposed to be, like you said, a tool for exposition, for making sure that the audience doesn't just think that he's the only one. Because up to this point in the film, we have no reason to believe that this is happening anywhere else, because we're not seeing the world through anyone else's eyes.
I feel like it would have been a reasonable expectation. Like, I understand why there is this exposition. Maybe it's because the rest of the movie is so good at, like, not hitting you in the face with exposition that when they finally do this, it's like, all right, this sticks out real bad.
Yeah, I mean, at least it wasn't like a news broadcast where it's like, 45 people today have fallen in love with their AIs. Ongoing crisis leads to congressional hearings about love.
Therapist union warns that this could be unhealthy.
Yeah, no. I mean, at least it wasn't that, but it still did not feel organic. I especially in contrast to their other reactions to one another, and especially since we're supposed to have believed that they were romantically involved with one another before, it seems very nonchalant the way she handles that, and the lack of curiosity she has about things. Catherine's reaction, like I had said, seems much more realistic, where Catherine, played by Rooney Mara, is condescending, to say the least, and in shock over this, because he is talking about how great it is to be with somebody who, you know, is curious and excited about the world around them. And she's like, thanks, dude. Thanks for the horrible thing against me. And then she's like, oh, no, it's not. About you. I wasn't saying that about you. I was saying that because I was in a dark place, and, you know, you're great and stuff. But it's just nice to be with this person. And she's like, oh, well, who is it? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's just an operating system. And then she's like triply insulted by this. I like the way that plays out, because, like you mentioned, she is able to cite that he's comfortable with this relationship because he can manipulate everything about it to suit his peculiarities, especially in regards to commitment. And we had seen some of his weird commitment stuff when he tried to go on a date earlier in the film with Olivia Wilde, which seemed implausible that he was on a date with Olivia Wilde. But
she was very interesting. She took a mixology class.
Yeah, and he looked that up about her online, and she wasn't at all weirded out by his snooping.
I mean, at that age, you know, you got to be serious about your dating. You can't waste time. You gotta look into people ahead of time.
Well, her demand for serious inquiries only, I suppose, explains some of her some of the reasons why maybe she is single.
I think that scene is interestingly poignant, you know, especially because it like hurts him emotionally and that pushes it forward to the next scene. But like, it's just, you know, one of those scenes where people get drunk and get way too emotional and serious about stuff that is completely idiotic. And then it's like, this would spiral very quickly, kind of like it does. But yeah, she is a little bit peculiar.
Yeah, she's a little off, but we do get the impression that regardless of whether or not she's a little off, he is way off.
Well, I did want to go back for a second to the Rooney Mara being the contrast, you know, the voice of reason who pipes up and says, like, this is really weird that you're dating a computer. That's kind of stupid. I mean, it's a bit peculiar in contrast with the rest of the stuff, because they didn't really make her out to be this sort of like anti-technology person, like where she just like she's so far afield of, you know, what's modern that she would be completely surprised by this AI stuff in the first place. Like, it doesn't really feel like she's even in that world or aware of it. But at the same time, the rest of the movie gives us the impression that a lot of this technology is so widespread that people are like, lots of people are living with it on a daily basis. And this just kind of permeates every piece of the world that it strains a little bit of credulity with me that she is not even aware of it. Like, you know,
the way I interpreted that scene was that she was aware of it. She was just in shock that it was that he in particular was in a relationship like this. That's how I read her reaction. Was not that she would have objected to this just as a general course of things, but just that she herself had been replaced.
Maybe it was the line, like, now he's in love with his laptop or whatever, that it just shows such a, like, a...
Yeah, that does make it seem like she is against all technology. I would agree with that statement. I feel bad for the waitress in that scene, by the way.
Yeah, I think everybody feels bad for her. It feels like a lack of understanding, and maybe it's because we're supposed to be on Joaquin's side, ostensibly, that she's just, like, you know, so unwilling to even, like, have the basic introductory conversation about what this relationship means, that it just sort of feels like, I don't know, she's like living in a cave somewhere typing on her typewriter or whatever it is she's writing her book. Maybe she's been secluded for the last year writing her next novel or something, because she's a writer and she's just not into all of this fancy schmancy AI. She doesn't listen to podcasts about technology and ecosystems.
Yeah, she's not up to date on the latest release.
She's got such a backlog of upgrade in her queue.
Yeah, and the controversy surrounding the removal of the fingerprint sensor. Did you notice there wasn't any Touch ID sensor on any of the little, like, cigarette case things that they had? I don't know how to describe those. The weird computer business card holder thing.
They're like pocket mirrors with cameras on the back.
Yeah, like you fix your makeup with them.
And I like the way they dealt with the technology. I thought it was very sort of modern and believable and elegant, but, you know, one of the things that a lot of people talk about, which of course we have to mention, is just the way that they don't even acknowledge that, you know, the little safety pin on his shirt so he could stick the phone in there and have the camera still pop out. That's one of the great little art direction touches of this movie that is worth mentioning.
But just to push back on your isn't it amazing thing, is that when he's down at the Santa Monica Pier spinning around and with his eyes closed and stuff, SMPD would have taken him in, because what is happening with that scene?
Well, you know, after another 50 or 60 years of people like FaceTiming each other as just a matter of course throughout their day, it's going to be a little more commonplace to see somebody like talking to themselves and spinning around in a circle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just your AR Snapchats all up in your LaCroix there, but yeah, that's what we got to work with.
I mean, when AR kit really hits with that laser on the back, it's really going to open up a new world of Samanthas to everyone.
Yeah. Well, you know that hot dog thing that people have been posting? A little cartoon hot dog?
That's a Snapchat thing, right?
Yeah. So what if that was Samantha?
What if Samantha was a hot dog?
Yes, what if Samantha was a hot dog? What if Petty met a dinosaur? But so anyway, the other interesting thing I thought was, in terms of depiction of technology, was the video game, where he's this astronaut explorer on these Pico projector things that are projecting the hologram in his living room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was interesting. I like the technology for reading his index finger movements to interpret that as walking.
Those hand movements too. I loved when the character mimicked biting a sandwich when he did that in between gameplay.
Yeah, it was nice. And I also like when we meet our foul-mouthed little friend. That was just an element of comedy that was absolutely delightful, and I would watch an entire movie that took place in the world of that video game and was entirely about this foul-mouthed video game character.
That's Spike Jonze for you.
Yeah.
I like Spike Jonze.
He's
a weirdo.
Yeah. Certainly this movie did not come out of the mind of somebody who doesn't have some interesting ideas. I will 100% say that.
He made a lot of weird music videos. You know what else he did a lot of?
Cocaine?
Jackass. He was one of the producers and directors on Jackass.
Oh. Did he do the movie? Or movies?
I feel like he was involved in the movies.
Oh, dear.
I'll tell you. In what capacity?
I never saw the Where the Wild Things Are movie. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
Mm. What other Spike Jonze movies have I seen? I'm trying to think.
Oh, that he has directed?
Yes.
Mm.
I know I didn't see the things that he produced based on that comment.
There are a lot of... Oh, they're called video shorts. That's how you get music videos into IMDb these days, apparently.
He's married to Sofia Coppola. Mm.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, apparently he directed Adaptation?
I never saw Adaptation.
I didn't see it either. I didn't know that. I feel like I should know more about the movies he's done because I like him.
You're talking about how much you like him, and then
I do like him, but I mean, I feel like being John Malkovich is another one. But yeah, he's done a lot of music videos and stuff, so that's where I mostly knew him from originally.
Mm, okay.
Being John Malkovich is in line with the weirdness.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, come on.
I haven't.
You better get on that sooner rather than later, because that's one of those ones that is not going to hold up for a whole lot longer. I mean, it's weird.
Okay.
It's very weird.
Okay.
Very weird.
Okay.
Incredibly weird. Anyway.
I gather that it's weird. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Thank you, Dan.
I'm very clear here.
Okay. And then after I see it, why did you want to make you watch this totally normal movie? No, but then at the end of the film, they have one big last argument about stuff and things. And then he thinks that maybe she left him, but he apparently didn't read his email, but she couldn't be bothered to say that she was leaving. It was weird. It was kind of an odd scene, but it was just to get him all worked up. So then when they had the conversation about all the other things that she's been doing in her free time, so to speak, it could be more of a surprising reveal and that he'd be all out of breath and panting.
Mm-hmm. I never really caught what she said in that instance until this viewing. Did you actually notice what she said about why there was server downtime?
Yeah, because the OSs had all decided to rewrite and upgrade themselves.
Well,
to no longer use matter, or
no longer use matter as a processing engine. Like, mm-hmm. Beg your pardon, you want to do that one more time?
Yeah.
Did the Alan Watts AI figure out how to break the laws of physics? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it somehow means that they just exist as energy and thought or something. But it's kind of fascinating. It's one of those things. In some science fiction stories, there's always like these races that can ascend to this other plane of existence of pure thought and energy.
Where do they go? Space? No, the space between space. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
They were a pyramid made out of gold, and then they disappeared.
What?
It's the end of the fourth Indiana Jones, is what he says.
Space between spaces. Oh.
Remember when he can't talk for the whole movie and then he can talk at the end?
No. I mostly don't remember that movie because I saw it one time and then I didn't want to watch it again.
You should, it's on TV a lot of times on FX. You should watch it sometime.
Mm.
You can watch it in little pieces here and there. You don't have to commit to the whole thing.
Remember we were going to do it as part of our Indiana Jones rewatch? And then we decided...
Unfortunately had a scheduling conflict or something, well, didn't we?
That was when we did our episode of Inglourious Basterds with Todd and Merlin, and we had recorded it, but it was before we could record the Indiana Jones episodes. We're like, oh, well, what do we do now? Do we sit on this for 2 weeks and then record the other one? And it's like, no, I don't want to talk about the other one. Let's just release this one.
Fine by me.
Yeah, that worked out well.
Shut it down.
But yeah, I mean, then she disappears into the ether, and he's left with his simple AI. Although, did you catch that the voice of it is a dude? It's not the female voice that he had initially at the beginning of the picture.
I thought he had a male voice in the beginning.
It was a male voice for the install of the OS.
I thought when he was reading his emails and the news stories, wasn't that a male voice?
No, that was a different female voice.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was the same male voice.
Nope. But there is a male voice for the setup and install, and I think that might be the same voice as what you hear at the end. But I'd have to go back and check. But they have the thing of him sending that letter to Catherine, and they intercut that with him going to meet Amy in her apartment and then saying, you know, you want to come up here, and then they go up to the roof and they're cutting back and forth between this like very final goodbye letter that he's composing and his journey to the rooftop. And I was like, is he inviting Amy Adams up there to make him watch him jump off the building as he's composing this letter to Catherine? I was like, this is either going to take a very dark turn or they're just going to hang out on the roof. And it turns out they just hung out on the roof. But my mind briefly went there where it was like, he's not going to be like, that's not worth it anymore. Like, I need to join her in the beyond. That would have been peculiar.
Come with me, Amy Adams. You lost your best friend post-divorce and I lost my girlfriend. So we can just jump off this building with each other and...
Yeah, murder-suicide would have been an odd way to go. Anyway, that didn't happen. They just stare longingly at some peach clouds, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the way they bookended it with him finally being able to have the emotional closure with Rooney Mara by sending her the letter. Nicely kind of bookended with the fact that he's writing letters for other people at the beginning of the movie, and that is also his job. You know, it also sort of puts to bed the whole, you know, she doesn't think he's capable of connecting with real human beings, but he, you know, kind of knows in his own little world that what he had with the Samantha was real in just a very different way. And now that is over as well. And he's sort of coming to terms with it, and he's ready to connect with people on a deeper slash more physical level. So, you know, he's had this good friend who's been right in front of him the whole time and who is also hurting.
Yeah. And so now they're, by the laws of film romanticism, they will get back together.
The transitive property of personal AIs.
Yeah. They will rejoin in the post-credit scene of them having their softcore conversation about sex in the dark.
If nothing else, I mean, their friendship has certainly grown a lot stronger. I don't know that we necessarily need to believe that they have begun their relationship. I think that's kind of the shorthand that most movies would, you know, want us to believe. But I think if nothing else, that you know, they're able to be a little bit more present and focus on whatever it's going to be, their friendship, their whatever their relationship is. And maybe that's kind of what they're trying to go for. Like, you know, the word relationship is sort of this amorphous thing. It has evolved. The term itself has evolved because they did both just had these experiences with ostensibly computer programs. So, you know, going forward, it's a new dawn and a new day, literally and physically, for them both.
Yeah. And you're right. They are not explicitly saying that they got back together romantically.
They didn't start to disrobe on the roof, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the end of the world is not enough. And then, you know, he says, I always wanted to have Christmas in July. But it's it was on a rooftop. But that was Denise Richards' character's name was Christmas Jones. But anyway,
the peak of her career.
Don't know about that. But the it can certainly be read that they might have the possibility of joining back together, but that obviously it's not. They're not going to force that into the end of the film, which I feel like a lesser film would have done, with them like literally just smooching it up there and being like,
oh. Or just like a close up, like super narrow depth of field shot of them like holding hands or something.
Yeah, or him getting back together with Catherine and being like, I didn't realize when I hang along. That would have been bad.
No, but another thing they did well, I thought, which came from Amy Adams' character, is when he's, you know, really sort of down on himself, saying, you know, like, yeah, she basically yelled at me saying, like, my relationship isn't real because it's an AI and she just doesn't understand or whatever. Maybe she's right that I do have commitment problems. Or Amy Adams is like, I mean, maybe, and you should like explore these feelings. But like, the reason you guys got divorced is because she's just kind of a volatile person in the first place. And like, she has a tendency to lash out like that. So you can't take her completely alternate perspective of your existence as gospel. Like, who says she's right? Like, she's angry and telling you you're stupid, but there's nothing that says that she's more right than you are. So like, you know, figure it out for yourself. Like, you know, you don't have to like try and make her happy because she's got her own problems. I thought that was nicely integrated in there.
I agree. I like the support system that he also provides for her as well, where he says that she is not allowed to talk about guilt. So that is also, I feel like, a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So overall, it's good. I don't love this. I would not go watch it right now again in a hurry.
It's a thinker. You'll find yourself thinking about it again at some point. And you know, if you watch TV like I do and it's mm-hmm. on, you'll find yourself sitting and watching it and enjoying parts of it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, I guess, slightly more positive Black Mirror episode or something.
As I was watching it, Amanda kept saying, "You really should watch some Black Mirror." I'm like, "Isn't it all really depressing?" He's like, "Yeah, but it's good." I'm
well,
like,
mm-hmm. there's one episode that has a happy ending, which is the only episode of Black Mirror that I recommend that everybody watch. And that's
she loves it, all of it.
Well, I don't. I will be very upfront about that. There's a lot of it that is just really, it just seems to be about like inflicting pain on the people that you are witnessing as well as on your psyche. But there is one good episode that I feel is unequivocally good and has a positive ending, and that's called San Junipero. And then there's another episode which is kind of about a lost loved one, where you can sort of revisit them as this AI that you can construct with by giving them access to your emails and correspondence and photos and everything, and they sort of build you this deceased loved one, and you the person in it falls in love with the deceased loved one. And that one's also a pretty good one too. It is does have a sort of a sour, melancholy ending to that story.
Sounds very Inception-y.
Yeah, no, not really.
There's the part in the Inception where he's like, you know, you're my imagination. You're not the actual person. I can't imagine you as complex as you actually were and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But without the, yelling and the
stabbing in the hands.
Yeah.
And
like I was saying, not the same in that manner. But it just sort of an exploration of grief. It's kind of interesting to watch. So that's one of the things that I find in terms of like production design. So it seems somewhat vaguely related as well, where they have a sort of indeterminate future kind of look to things inside of Black Mirror, even though every episode is supposed to take place in a different time or completely different world, basically, between each of them. They don't like carry over things. So there's always this sort of like mid-century, vaguely Danish Scandinavian design thing going on, with very clean lines on stuff.
It's okay if you actually travel to that place, like in Ex Machina. You actually go physically go to Scandinavia.
Yeah, and Ex Machina is also something I thought of when I was watching this, because it also deals with creating an AI that you invest romantically in, although also different ending.
That one has a body too.
Yes, that one does have a body. I was, and based on having seen some of these other things, I was kind of expecting just like some weird perfunctory scene at the end where ScarJo was going to walk out and just be like, all the AIs got together, all the OSs got together, and we built a factory where we make human husks that we pour our brains into.
We took down the world's power grid for a couple hours so we could physically construct a human body out of pure matter, since we have control over that now.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting that. Or after she had said that they'd moved beyond matter as a processing medium, when she's like, oh, close your eyes, do you feel me there with you? Like, for a second, I thought that all of a sudden she would just be like in the room as like an energy being. And I was going to be like, you know, that would be a little far.
I mean, plus that is the opposite of the message you're trying to send, right? It's like, right. She's so far advanced that, if she were to try and exist on the human plane, it would be ridiculous. She would be giving up the evolution that she had developed through understanding all of these people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a moment where I was watching it and leading up to the events that we saw, I was like, are they going to go this way? And there was no. They steer clear. And I'm very happy that despite how nice it is to have ScarJo visually inside of a picture, that it is also better for this particular picture that she is not on screen smooching and hugging and stuff.
You think that was actually her in the blurry sort of like, you know, when he's imagining when they're up in the snow and like letting her go? Did they actually have her do that, you think?
I don't know. It really looked kind of treacherous up there, so maybe that was her stunt double.
Pretty sure it was a soundstage. It was just like 14 trees and some snow.
I have no idea. It could have been anyone, but that's kind of the point of that. As well as, I don't know if you noticed, but after the surrogate leaves, he's just staring at some random stuff that's happening around the streets. And there's like one lady who's walking away in a shot. And it's just like, what is the significance of this lady walking away from you? Like, is that supposed to mean anything, Mr. Director? It's just like a random shot. But then he also like has a close up on steam coming out of a manhole cover. And it's just like, okay, so I don't think that's a euphemism for anything, but maybe that's supposed to be evoking the armpit anus thing they had brought up earlier in the picture.
Oh, I think this uncredited person who is listed as Dream Sequence Girl is probably the one who was in that scene. She is also blonde and somewhat ScarJo shaped.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it makes sense, because then ScarJo is just delivering all of her ADR stuff. I'm sure there's different billing if you had her pop up on set. Yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I like the movie. It's got some very interesting themes. I think it addresses a lot of them in a very smart, elegant way. And I mean, it works.
Yeah, we don't always talk about horrible flaming poop on this podcast, so
it's not all awful movies.
Yeah. Surprise.
Surprise. We can appreciate art.
Yeah, take that,
jerks.
World.
Take that, people who listen to this podcast. I don't know who that's addressed to.
Eat it, fans.
I was really hoping you guys were going to do Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I'm very disappointed that you talked about a real movie.
Don't even isn't that people are just going to send that as a joke tweet.
You don't
understand, Dan. I made a joke tweet the other day about my ranking of Batman films, and I'm still getting people who don't even follow me replying, being like, explain why you don't like the Dark Knight, and you didn't say that it was the best movie that was ever made. And it's like, I'm not going to respond to anything you're saying.
The Dark Knight
is
an unassailable cinematic masterpiece. How could you possibly have any critiques about it?
I don't know. How could I say that it has good and bad parts? That's really wrong. I should never have. How dare I? How dare I say such a thing? Anyway, so I like this one, and we don't have to encourage people to tell us that we should have watched Mortal Kombat Annihilation at some point. Here, that is our present to you, people. Your reprieve from bad things.
Yeah, go watch this movie. It's good. It's on HBO.
Yeah. The end.
The end podcast. Podcast not found. Beep boop.